Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Andrew Johnson of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And as always, we have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. And Andrew, it's kind of interesting. It was kind of assumed that after so many of the liberal establishment and the media and otherwise kind of kicked Hillary Clinton to the curb in 2008 for the fresh new flavor of Barack Obama, that they would be very loyal to her the next time around. And that might end up being true, but not so much for some people. And that's our good martini today. Jonathan Chait, a well-known liberal columnist, has a new piece out for New York Magazine, not really talking about Hillary at all, but basically ripping apart the notion that Bill Clinton is a political genius, that he's some sort of a savant, and that he kind of goes into his analysis on a couple of current Senate races and saying that what he has to say is either incorrect or should be obvious to just about anyone. Here's his closing paragraph. Clinton does give a good speech, and he does retain more pull than Barack Obama or most Democrats with marginal Democratic constituencies. He also follows politics closely. Beyond that, is there any actual reason to believe the story of Clinton as political impresario is anything more than a mutually convenient myth, essentially for the sake of his wife's likely presidential campaign? Along with that, here's Ed Schultz of NBC at the recent Tom Harkin event in Iowa trying to drum up a rivalry within the Democratic primary for 2016.
Is it going to be Hillary?
Yes.
For sure?
I think so.
Are you sure about that? Well, what about Bernie? What about Joe?
Bernie I love and Joe I love. But we're ready.
Is it all about Hillary?
No, not at all. I'm not ready to say I'm ready for Hillary yet. Don't let anybody hear me say that.
I love Bernie and Joe, but the party does need them to move Hillary a little more to the left.
Not offended by Hillary, but
sure.
Not totally set that she's the only answer either.
Okay. So there's Bernie Sanders, there's Joe Biden.
Absolutely. I wish we had more talk from Bernie.
More Bernie and more Hillary to the left. That's who showed up for the Tom Harkin event in Iowa. But, Andrew, very interesting that these people who suddenly turned on Hillary Clinton in 2008, 6 years later, they have not turned back.
Or, like, they turned back, but now they're bored of her again. But it is interesting to see. She kind of had that – well, it wasn't kind of. She had that flawed book tour this past summer. And in a lot of ways, people saw – they were kind of building up this steak fry with Tom Harkin as, oh, she's going back to Iowa, you know, she's going to be on her game now. And apparently, you know, even the attendees that are, you know, that are there to see her aren't all that thrilled to see Hillary as well. And it's interesting also with the Jonathan Chait article sort of even attacking Bill Clinton, because if there was anyone I thought in sort of the Democratic Party that I just didn't think people would ever turn on, I thought it'd be Bill Clinton. He's just so highly revered. But it's not a total groundswell, but the wave that isn't breaking for Hillary is now also somehow making Democrats turn on the Secretary of Explaining Stuff, on everyone's favorite guy in 2012, Bill Clinton. So that's all very interesting to see.
Yes. Now, to go along with that, obviously polls of the Democratic presidential race and 2016 are very early, and it's basically all name recognition at this point, but Hillary's above 60% in ballot questions that include Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and anybody else you can throw in there, Martin O'Malley. So if anybody is going to make a serious run at her, they've got a long way to go. But that was the same way it was at this time 8 years ago. So
I was actually saying this just yesterday. Yeah, I know what happened, but I would love for the Democrats to nominate Bernie Sanders and just see them try and sell him to the country to just see, you know, and especially if he ran against, you know, one of the younger GOP candidates that you know, just sort of see that on the stage and see where Americans would gravitate, because I think a Bernie Sanders ticket would probably set the Democratic Party back.
Is he like the far left version of Ron Paul was in the Republican primaries? Where
that's actually a pretty good comparison. Maybe, yeah. Where he kind of has this weird corner of the party that is very passionate. If you know who he is, you know what he stands for. You like him, you'll stand behind him no matter what. But you do not want to see him being the face of your party. And I just think it'd be hilarious to see, especially, you know, if it was also that at the expense of, you know, the anointment that is Hillary Clinton. The last thing I was just noticing about the Jonathan Chait piece is, you know, saying that Bill Clinton isn't as savvy as he's revered to be. Bill Clinton did not know the name of Bruce Braley yesterday at the event. So I think he called him Bruce Bailey. So maybe Chait's on to something. Maybe Bill isn't as slick as we think he is.
Before we get too many emails, we are not equating Ron Paul and Bernie Sanders on competency or policy, other than the fact that they are further to the right and left, respectively, to most of the people who ran for president. Ron Paul
would
be...
Good disclaimer.
Yes, it's important. Anyway, on to the bad martini now. And just when it looked like things were... all great for Republicans to surge to the Senate majority, and it's still obviously possible that they could. In fact, the odds are still better than average that they will, but the odds are also getting closer and closer to 50-50. Nate Silver, we were happy to report a few weeks ago, had a 64% chance Republicans would take over the Senate. Now he's got that down to 55%, and it's largely because a couple of races are not continuing to trend the way that they had been. One of them is in North Carolina. The Republican Party there, Andrew, was so thrilled that they avoided the runoff. They got kind of the guy who was the safe candidate, the Speaker of the House there, Tom Tillis. And in some polls, he had edged ahead of Kay Hagan, who is not particularly popular at all. But in three new polls, you now have Hagan ahead. And in one, from an American Insight survey, which is a Republican-leaning firm, they've got Hagan up 10, 50 to 40. Elon University has it, Hagan up 45-41, and PPP is just out with a brand new poll. They've also got it a 4-point edge for Hagan at 44-40, and that one obviously tilts to the left normally. So looks like with a more likely margin of about 4 points than 10 points that this is still in play for Republicans, but it's certainly not a trend that you want to see less than 2 months from Election Day.
Yeah, and I actually happen to be working on something about North Carolina, so I won't spill too much. But basically, around the 3 to 4 point range is where a lot of people think it actually is. Just before Labor Day, they were actually tied. It was actually a lot closer than it is now. And it is troubling for Republicans. It seems like what the Hagan and her allies have done is just kind of go on this massive ad blitz in the last couple weeks that are just hitting Tillis and just swaying public opinion, at least for now. But North Carolina has kind of had its ups and downs as far as where Republicans thought they could put it. At one point, we thought it was surefire Hagan. You know, Hagan's the most vulnerable. She's gone. Now Hagan looks like she's sitting a little bit more comfortably. Then it goes back to, you know, pure toss-up. And so North Carolina has kind of been going through these ebbs and flows. We'll see. There's still a lot of time between now and then. But if you're Republicans, you definitely want to make sure that you are using resources wisely, because as we've seen in past elections, you almost feel worse when you've invested and spent so much time in one state and then it ends up being all for naught and you think, where else could we have done this? And you look at the map.
We'll look forward to that piece and see what other nuggets of insight you have when that comes out. Onto the crazy martini now, Andrew. And, you know, you like to see substantive policy debates play out in a variety of places, and from the Senate floor to social media and everywhere in between. And Senator Jeff Sessions has been lauded by many, and rightly so, for really leading the charge against the Gang of Eight and convincing many House Republicans not to go with the establishment when it comes to immigration reform legislation. And he was proved visionary in the minds of many when the border crisis erupted earlier this summer. But one of the key advocates on the other side of that debate is Mark Zuckerberg, the billionaire founder of Facebook. And on the Senate floor, as you point out in a post on the corner, Sessions has called out Zuckerberg for his activism and saying that billionaires, you know, are trying to create all these flood of illegal workers into the country. And so Mark Andreessen, who is on the Facebook board of directors, has decided to go after Sessions on Twitter, calling him an odious hack and responding to all a bunch of random other people's criticisms of Jeff Sessions. So clearly the tone of the debate deteriorated quite quickly. So what do you make of the fact that we now have a social media war between Jeff Sessions and Zuckerberg and his lieutenants?
Yeah, well, first off, I like that a Facebook board of directors member went to Twitter to share his outrage. I don't know what that's telling of, but I found that interesting. But, I mean, he's definitely getting under their skin as far as addressing the STEM visas and whatnot. And if anything, I think it sort of lays credence to what the argument that Sessions has been making. I mean, he's been arguing that, again, the Zuckerbergs and the Gates have been pushing this all at the expense of American workers, because they can get these workers from other countries for much cheaper. And he clearly got under their skin. They call him an odious hack. At one point, Andreessen says he thinks that Sessions might be clinically insane, and even he spells doom for the Republican Party, that this stance will, you know, forever mean they'll never win a national election again. So I don't know if Sessions was specifically looking, you know, to irk them individually rather than call attention to it, but he definitely got their attention, and we'll see where it goes.
You know, it's almost like a Facebook comment section. The way that some of the language goes, or just comment sections on any other website, you have a substantive policy argument stated in the article, and within two, you know, comments, there's a Nazi and an odious hack, and it only devolves from there.
Exactly. There's I haven't seen any emojis yet. No sad emojis, but so far, but yeah, there's still time.
That's right. Even the founders of these sites are not immune to the name-calling when it comes to actually using them. Andrew, always great to have you with us. We'll talk to you soon.
Take it easy. Thanks.
Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Wednesday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And tune in on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.